Welcome to STEM Talk, where ideas ignite impact. STEM Talk is the official audio podcast series by STEM Connect Private Limited, your gateway to innovation, excellence, and thought leadership in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Here, we bring powerful conversations, breakthrough insights, and bold voices that are shaping the future of STEM in Pakistan and beyond. Whether you're a curious learner, a seasoned professional, or an innovator at heart, this is your space to explore, engage, and be inspired.
Hi, this is Dr. Bilal Siddiqui, and you're watching STEM Connect. Today we have a guest who has huge experience in banking system, and he is one of the pioneers who has introduced Islamic banking system in Pakistan, Mr. Parvez Saeed Saab.
Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Saab.
I'm fine. Thank you.
I'm fine. Thank you very much for inviting me at this forum. And yes, I've had a very extensive and intensive experience in Islamic banking and banking. I started my career with a multinational bank and conventional bank, and then I switched over to Islamic banking purely on the basis of conviction, because I believe that riba is haram and we should get out of this system. In Islamic banking, there is not a single aspect of Islamic banking in which I have not worked hands-on for a long time. So over 20 years experience, I have worked in an Islamic startup in Pakistan, Islamic startup in UAE. Then I have worked with three different multinational banks in UAE, also on Islamic. And then I was working as a regulator with the Central Bank of Pakistan, looking after Islamic banking. And then my last assignment in this field was as a CEO of Islamic Bank. So basically, I was also the member of and the secretary of the Sharia board at the Central Bank. And in this capacity, and in the capacity of different Islamic banks around, I have had the pleasure of interacting with the world's most renowned and well-known Sharia scholars. And I have a very good idea of how we all, how the bankers and the regulators and the Sharia advisor approach the subject of Islamic banking. So based on that, I would like to share my experiences with you.
So we are very lucky that we have got Dr. Parvez Saeed Saab here on our board so that we can ask him and request what possibilities and what concepts are linked with Islamic banking and conventional banking.
Actually, I'm not going to challenge anybody, particularly any Sharia expert or Sharia advisor. I have a lot of respect for all of them. They are very, very learned people, and they provide very valuable service, and they have been instrumental in trying to help us, in guiding us on the right path. However, the fact of the matter is that the Sharia advisor tend to look at all the issues in one particular kind of way from the point of view of the Islamic law. And I believe, after going through Islamic banking aspects, I discovered or I realized that there's something missing. I mean, everything was there from the Sharia point of view, good contracts, riba is haram, everything, but there was something missing. And that's when I realized what was missing was that nobody, as per my knowledge information, approached this service, this subject from the point of view of banking and economics. Islamic banking is not about Islam. Islamic banking is about banking. And I do not recall, I haven't met, yes, there are people, Sharia advisors, who have a working knowledge of banking, who are involved, but they are not bankers, they are not experts in banking. They are without doubt unmatched experts in Sharia and Islamic law. So I felt one of the values that I could add here is to actually look at this whole subject right from the beginning, but from the point of view of economics and banking. And when I did that, a completely different picture emerged compared to the picture that we have now. It's two different things. So that is what I am looking at now.
So is there any historical context linked with this particular concept of Islamic banking right from the start, when we have got, before the industrialization model and time?
Yes, let me just brief you on the origins. I'll just mention to you how the whole process developed till the point of riba, and then we'll go from point of riba to Islamic banking. and I'll summarize, but be aware that this process that I'm going to summarize for you in 2-3 minutes was actually spread over centuries and in different part of the world. So I'm going to give you the crux of it. The fact of the matter is that the economy started with trading, barter trading. People would exchange things that they had. Then this started to grow a little complicated when people started trading things, not the things they needed themselves, but the things that they could trade for and then trade it with somebody else against the things that they needed. And similarly, it became geographically over a wider area, and the products were a lot of range of products, very complex. So what happened was, when barter trade started developing, another concept started developing, and that concept was the concept of money. And then, you know, if I exchange something with you, had something, I had something that you wanted, we exchanged. So that was exchange. Then what happened was that I had something you wanted, but you didn't have something that I wanted, but I knew somebody else who wanted that. So I'll exchange it with you, then exchange it with him and get what I want. So now the concept of money as a store of value and a medium say of exchange, it established itself. Then it became very complex. The trade became barter trade. It became very complex. It became across boundaries and so on. So there was a time when another concept was introduced, and that was bare module. Bare module basically means sale against deferred settlement. Meaning, if we have a transaction and if we settle it on spot, that's the sale. But if I say one part of it is settled at spot, but the next, the repayment or the resettlement, I give you something on spot and you give it back to me
after
with my profit
or year
or whatever time, that was sale against deferred settlement, and that was bare module. What this bare module did was that it established another characteristic of money, which was the time value. Money had a time value. The difference in the spot rates and future rates was basically the time value of money. So this was the concept of money, which was being run parallel to the development of trade, established itself like that. And till about 150 years before our prophet came to the world, this was established practice in all of Arabia, including Makkah. This was also the established practice in Makkah at the time of our prophet. And this was bare module was accepted and approved trade practice at the time of the prophet.
Oh, so it means that it was in a practice at that particular time before the prophet came.
Exactly. But it was a concept in the sense, because we had money, but we did not have currency. The concept of currency also was developing at the same time, but the currency could not be developed because there were this one main characteristic of the currency, which is that currency needs to be fungible, meaning one coin, for example, gold, should be exact same value as any other coin of gold. But that would be only possible if, for example, the weights were standardized and the purity level was standardized.
But sorry to interrupt, didn't we have dirham or dinar at that particular time?
We had dirhams and we had dinars at particular time, and it's mentioned in the Quran as well. However, dirhams and dinars in those days were the units of weight, just like we have Masha and Tola for silver and gold. Same thing, it was a unit of weight, not the name of a currency.
Okay.
So because it was a unit of weight, the gold coins and the silver coins ended up being traded by weight. So their values differed. So they were considered a commodity as well. So let's come to the point at the time when our prophet was there and trading was done. The trading was actually barter. Currency was not in vogue. It was under the process of developing. So gold coins and silver coins was also traded by weight. And in those days, the three concepts of money that were pure, absolutely established and practiced was money as a concept, was medium of exchange, store of value, and had a time value of money. So this is what it is at the time of our prophet and at the time of the revelation of ayats regarding riba.
Okay.
So what is riba? Now let's consider that, because when somebody tells us, you know, bank loan, and if you have to borrow some money and have to give something extra back, so at that point of time, money was just a concept. There was no currency, so there was no physical borrowing of any, there were no financial transactions. All transactions were actually barter. But what happened was that some of the traders in those times started misusing bare module. And what they used to do, see, in those days, taking a personal loan was not taking money. loan was basically taking any of the products. So people would not take it. They would take something, for example, if a person was very hungry, his family was very hungry, and there was a trader who was trading in, say, dates. So he would go and try and get some dates. So
if, let's suppose, if I come and I am a very needy person,
yes,
and I come to you and ask you something which you have.
You say, okay, you, please give me some dates, my family is very hungry. So the thing is, the idea was that the person who is giving this date for the person who is needy should be a charity.
Right.
But instead of charity, they used to say, let's make this bare mojo.
Oh.
So what they deferred settlement, that okay, take as many as you like, but you give me this, whatever you're taking, plus more after a month or whatever period.
But since I am a needy person, I am not able to afford providing money to you later, at the later point of time as well.
Yes. Now that you mentioned the word money, let me also clarify at that point of time, the financial system and the commodity trade system were the same, and the commodity which was the subject matter of the trade, like in this case dates, were also the money.
Okay.
So what you are lending to him was money.
Was money.
But what he was needing is something to feed himself and his family. So it was a commodity.
Right.
But because of this cycle, when if he couldn't give, then you gave him more time, but he had to give more dates back to you. So this continued, and this primarily the idea from the part of the trader was to induce you or induct you in economical slavery. In those days, you worked yourself or you had slaves. There were hardly any employer-employee relationship. So this is how they got people entrapped into economic trap and used them as literally slaves, get them to do what? And this was not just with individuals. It was also with tribes. And the and if you know the history, it's very clear. The Quraysh had a free pass. They would go everywhere without any issues, no security issues, whatever. The reason was two. One, they had everybody's statues of their gods in Kaaba. Mm. And whenever they used to come to Kaaba, they used to host them. And secondly, most of the tribes in that area were under obligation to them because of their riba. Because of they needed something, they gave it to them, and then they increased the return settlement amount, settlement quantity more and more, which cannot be settled. So this is how Quraysh were able to go everywhere, very secure, very easy, cheap. No, because if somebody else went, they had to first give money to the tribe of their area to make sure that they are secure. So if they were going from Makkah to Yemen, there were many tribes in between. They had to pay everyone going, they had to pay everyone coming. So it was very expensive. So that was the secret of their success. But the point is that now, you know, at the time that riba was, the ayat prohibiting riba came, this was the situation. And it was the misuse of bare module to enslave people and tribes economically. That was actually, this practice was actually riba, and this was prohibited. So when this was prohibited, the trader said, why? Same thing. It's the same thing as trade. That it's bare module. And that's a trade, and that's permissible. Then in response to that, the revelation came that people who say that this is the same are going to be, will get up like somebody whom the Satan has driven insane by touching.
Yes.
Why? Because they say that trading is the same as riba, where riba is halal, but trading is halal and riba is haram. Meaning bare mojal is halal, time value of money is halal, but misuse of time value of money to enslave people, which is called riba, is haram.
Okay.
That is how riba became haram. So, and it makes perfect sense. There's no justification for that. Now, after about, during this time when our Prophet, peace be upon him, passed away, Hazrat Abu Bakr started a concerted effort on trying to introduce a currency, but he could not because of two reasons. The weights were not standardized, purity level wasn't standardized of the gold and silver, and secondly, the Islamic State was spread on a very small area.
Mm.
So, then Hazrat Umar came, and he started enforcing standardization of weights and measures. He was an outstanding administrator. He kept doing that. So after 120 years of the Prophet passing away, in the time of Khalifa al-Mansur of the Abbasi dynasty, the weights and measures and purity levels were established, and the Muslim empire was over a considerable physical geographical area. So he was the first one to introduce currency. So the currency was introduced 120 years later. When currency was introduced, we needed the rules for this new thing. It was not there before because it was barter. Now, so one of the ways the Sharia scholars look at driving rules for something new is they look at the Quran and Sunnah and see if there's something that resembles something that's come now. And if there's some resemblance, they take that thing and then make necessary adjustment and apply the rules to the new thing. In those days, the two very famous, there were many outstanding scholars. The very famous was Abu Hanifa, Imam Abu Hanifa, and Maliki, Imam Maliki. They were there and they then decided primarily, they looked at it and they felt that the trade, barter trade, you know, exchange of one for the other resembled currency ruling because currency was also being exchanged. They did not differentiate between the properties of a commodity or the properties of a currency being totally different. So they took basically the rules of commodity exchange and applied it to currency exchange. During that time, the question came of riba. And because it was a fact that bear module was used, misused in fact, to indulge, to enforce riba on people, they decided to not allow bear module in currency. Right. Because they felt that if we allow it in the currency, it will still again refer in riba, which is you know, unfair and therefore is haram, so we will not allow it. So they did not allow, Abu Humam Anifa did allow, that first time if you are giving something, time value of money is allowed. But if he is not able to pay back in time, then you cannot increase.
And okay, then it should be established right from the start.
And that cannot be changed in time. Because again, they were trying to deny the use of time value of money, which was established halal, acceptable practice during the time of Prophet as well. Okay. But they wanted to discourage it completely because they felt that it would result in riba, which is haram. So that is how the time value of money got out and Muslims said no. Muslim scholars said no. If you're going to lend money for some time period, the amount you have lent is the amount you're going to get back. Any addition, we'll consider the riba and riba is haram.
Okay.
So that is how the rulings of trade got applied to currency, and that is how the time value went out so that riba could be avoided. Then about another 100 odd years, formal banking system came into play. Because you see, the reason why currency came and why banking system came, because trade became very complicated. Now, you know, traders were some other people. People with extra money were some other people. They were in different parts of the world. They didn't know each other. Somebody needed money. Somebody had extra money. Mm. So there was a role required for an intermediary. So that intermediary became a bank and they put in a system that was completely different than trade. They were not there to manage trade, but the banking system was meant to support. But it was managing money and currency.
So basically, banking system is the offspring of, you can say, a trade system.
It was born out of the trade system. Right. The trade system, as it got complicated, it gave birth to different sales transactions like bear module. When it further developed, became sophisticated, it gave birth to currency. Mm. When it became further sophisticated, it gave birth to the banking system. Mm. But currency was very different than commodity. And also banking was different than currency. It was managing of currency, not currency itself. However, because of this, let's say, procedure that Sharia scholars always adopt, that they look at if there's a precedence and then from there they adopt the rules for the new thing, they took the rules of barter trade, applied it to currency. When banking came in, they took the same rule and applied it to the bank.
Okay.
So it was really oranges and apple trading, and banking is oranges and apple, yet they applied the rules of oranges was applied to the apples, and therefore there was a hodgepodge and Muslims kept struggling. Just to give you an idea what was happening in other part of the world, I find it very interesting. Christians, another Abrahamic religion,
yes,
they had the same issue. In the time of King Henry III, they introduced the currency first time in their part of the
world.
And the same thing happened. and their clergy said, you know, no addition when you lend a currency because that would be usury. Mm. Then that system developed and became complicated, and it was realized that this is not going to work. Mm. Time value cannot be, a currency should have a time value, otherwise it won't work. By the time they reached Henry VIII then said, okay, no, this is not a workable system. He constituted an assembly, a council of 7 experts. Okay. 3 experts were pure economics, 3 experts were pure clergy, and the 7th one was clergy as well as economists. Okay. And he gave them this, okay, now tell me what to do. So they sat and then they came up with the proposition, okay, no, the time value of money exists, but it should be linked to the trade. And how is it going to be linked to the trade? That the central bank or the sovereign at that time, based on the trade parameters of his country, you know, that day, whatever the trade parameters, whatever. Inflation, whatever, based on that, he will come up with the rate. The central bank, Bank of England, will come with the repo rate. That rate would be the interest rate for the currency. It's nothing to do with the usury. Usury, anything above that.
Okay.
Because if you take anything, because this central bank rate was dependent on the trade parameters. Mm-hmm. Trade is permissible.
Permissible.
So this is fine. But anything above that is then considered unfair, mm-hmm. coercive, and usury. So as usual, clergy refused to accept it. They said, no, anything in addition is usury. Just like later our Sharia scholars said, no, any admission whatsoever is riba.
Is riba.
They said anything. Then what King Henry did was a different interesting thing. He started a reformist movement in the church. Mm. Then that reformist movement resulted in the Church of England separating itself from the church, from the Roman church. Okay. Thus the Protestants came. Mm. Uh-huh. And when the Church of England broke away from the Catholic Church in Rome, they started reporting to the sovereign of Britain. So the King Henry VIII, he had the Bank of England and the Church of England both reporting to him.
Okay.
So then it became very easy for him to establish this. He made a law, first time, that anything above 10% is usury and 10% bank interest. Then later he realized that trade parameters keep changing, so the bank rate will keep changing. Mm-hmm. So he said, fine, as long as the central bank is the one that is announcing a rate, whatever the rate they announce, it's interest, which is perfectly fine because it's based on trade. Anything above that is usually not allowed. So that when they took that stance, their trade was very well supported by the banking system and they started doing very well economically.
And what about the community? Was it acceptable to the community as well? People start involving in that?
Yes, system? Because of two reasons. One is because the church had separated and Church of England mm-hmm. accepted it. Okay, fine, we accept okay. this interest and we accept this usury. This is a separation. So the people of England started, and then the fact of the matter, it started to become very popular because then they started seeing the result of this very efficient system comparatively on the trade. Mm-hmm. So everybody was happy. So
the result were the outcomes in the community were improved as well.
The economic outcome, economy of the country improved. It was working very well. On the other hand, the Muslims were still tied up what to do because they wanted to sort of, what should I say, pretend that it's not financial transaction, it's trade transaction.
So actually were, the conspiracy, not conspiracy, but confusion was prevailing in Pakistan.
In Islamic areas. System. Then what the Islamic areas, then what did they do? They just say, okay, we'll have a Musharka and Mudarama, same thing. Over here, they said different, they took a different stance. In England, they said, no, we agree. It's a question of the risk you want to take. Huh? Mm. Musharka is basically you want to share risk.
Yes.
So share this corporate structure, the stock exchange that you have based on. They started introducing that. Okay, here's a corporate structure. You want to do Musharka, go into this, buy your shares. Then you are a profit and loss sharing. Mm. That's what you want. Then different kind of economic instrument they started introducing at different levels so that people could participate in the economy and get whatever return depending on the risk they want to take. But it was a separate system and they did not confuse it with the trading.
Okay.
Trading of commodities in barter. And by that time, that also went away. There was basically then banking supporting trading and there was trading against currency and against money. So they established themselves. Mm. Muslims kept floundering. And where it came to head was that when there was Suleiman the Magnificent, Khalifa of Osmani Khalifa.
Yes.
At that time, he said, okay, this is becoming too complicated. So he started participating in the same interest-based system as the British were. And his state was doing well. Clergy got onto him. And they said, wait a minute, this is haram. This is riba. You are indulging. It's haram. We will not allow you to do this. So he didn't do what Henry VIII did. Instead, what he did was, he made these instruments that you have even today. All the Islamic banking, so Mudarba, Musharka, Ijara, Istasna, all these, he was the one who came up with these contracts.
Okay.
And this was basically to work his way around the clergy.
Okay.
So he said, okay, here it's a trade. Trade is allowed. It's not. And then underneath those contracts, it was same conventional banking, but that's the only way it goes. It's a different system. So he was showing the Sharka scholar that it's a trading system, but what actually he was doing was, he was managing the money, which is banking.
So basically these concepts, Mudarba and Musharka and all these different concepts, they came right from the prevailing point of Suleiman.
They became known among the economists as the workarounds. These instruments called the workarounds, the Sharia.
Okay.
Fine. Okay. When the pressure grew, then there was a time when the Osmani Empire was direly in need of money. There were wars they had to fight. There were many other things. But because of this workarounds, they were not able to raise enough money at a cheaper cost in the shortest period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because their enemy was able to do it much faster. They had a very efficient working system compared to them. And because of that, their money was cheaper to them. The money, eventually, this was one of the key factors that led to the bankruptcy of the Khilafat, which was again a key reason why our Khilafat fell. There were many reasons.
Okay.
This was one of the key reasons, because they economically they collapsed. And they collapsed because they could not raise enough money efficiently and cheap, at a cheap cost. That's done. So now the fact of the matter is, one thing you need to ponder upon, are we going to repeat this? Are we doing anything different, or is it the same thing that we have got these Islamic instruments, so-called trade instruments, but behind that we are actually participating in interest base. Yet, because of these cumbersome contracts and whatever facade we have, it becomes expensive.
Yes.
It becomes expensive. Obviously. And then if you look at the way Islamic banking works, and I am a practitioner of that art, all that extra cost eventually comes on to be borne by the depositor and nobody else.
Yes, obviously.
So that is unfair.
That is unfair.
That, in fact, in my opinion, is riba. Islamic banking violates a lot of Islamic concept. First of all, look at the concept of transparency. You are actually conducting a financial transaction, yet you are claiming that it's a trade transaction by virtue of the contracts.
So technically,
you are claiming it's trade. Actually, there's no transparency. Mm. And you know the famous ayat, I don't recall the exact reference, where it says, to people who have faith, why do you say something that you don't do?
Oh.
And you know that Allah hates that you say something that you don't do.
Mm.
So we are saying that it's a trade contract. We are doing a financial contract. So we are violating transparency, we are violating everything in the book. So basically, because of this, the Islamic banking, in my opinion, is actually become more of close to riba than the conventional banking. They are fairly transparent.
Okay.
They take time value of money. Time value of money was never haram at all. Misuse of time value of money was haram. They don't misuse. They can't misuse. They are regulated very strictly by a central bank.
Mm.
The prime rate is announced by the central bank. Then central bank has their inspection, monitoring, control. So riba in conventional bank is very, very difficult, but very easy in Islamic bank, because there is no transparency. My opinion, and again, because I move around, have been moving around among the Sharia scholars, they have a belief. The belief that at this point of time, it is the necessity, law of necessity, to allow the Islamic banks to do that, because they are very small in size.
Yeah.
But if they keep doing this and they can become big in size, then at the back end, the Islamic economic system would develop, which means trade. I absolutely fail to understand why would you want to develop a system similar to barter trading? I mean, that is actually
at this point of time.
Instead of going ahead, we are wanting to go back to the time when trade was. The banks are not trading houses. Trading houses. Anybody who wants to have indulgent trading system, fine. go buy stocks, go buy established companies.
Yeah.
Corporate entities are all musharkas, all the shareholders are musharaks there.
Yes, yes, obviously.
So do that. Why must you take banking, which is actually being an intermediary, because on people who have extra money and people who need money because they can deploy it but don't have the money. And these people who have the extra money don't have the skills to deploy. Mm. So this is basically a system of matching. If there's a mismatch, your economy is going to suffer. There's going to be a lack of transparency. And you are, in my opinion, violating a lot of rules of Islam itself. Riba is haram. That you have derived. Riba, original form was not haram.
Was
you have made it haram. But transparency, lack of transparency is haram. It's an established rule. And the fact is that to say something and do something else, it's established rule that it is haram. That's what we are indulging in. And I think one needs to be very, these are just my opinions, but I think up to now I haven't heard a lot of people or anybody, in fact, and I have been moving around globally in this factor, in this field, who has actually looked at this subject from the point of view of economics and banking. They have all looked at it from the point of view of Islamic law.
Mm.
And there is a big difference. If you change your point of view, then you will see the picture is totally different.
Mm.
Now my contention, or the reason why I'm talking about this and so critically, is that apparently we have a law that by, I think, 2028, we are going to convert all our Islam banking into Islamic. It's a major step. And it has been done before, like I said, Caliph Suleiman of Osmani Empire did that and it failed. And it actually resulted in bankruptcy of the country and then eventually the downfall of empire.
And that Islamic banking system will use all those utensils and instruments like Mudarba,
No new instrument has been introduced. So why don't we just study what happened and see if there's a change. You see, the last nail in the coffin of, let's say, Muslim economies was when Industrial Revolution came in London, in England. So the scale of industry became very large in a very short period of time. But because they had got the system of money and banking in place, it was very easy for them to scale up their banking and meet the needs of industry. Then after that, we've never been able to catch up, despite the fact that most of the resources are with us. We have got natural resources, we've got human resources, all sorts of resources. But the system to efficiently manage this belongs to them.
Yes.
And the main reason, in my opinion, is because they did not make the mistake that we have made by declaring time value of money as riba and considering it haram. It was not that. Look at it again. Look at it from every point of view. It was not the time value of money. It was the misuse of time value of money to induce economic slavery on people and tribes. That slavery bit was riba and that was haram. And in today's banking with interest, that's not possible. You cannot do that.
So it means that the conventional, today's conventional banking system is purely similar to the European system, what they had. And now since we are shifting toward Islamic banking and using those instruments, we will be doing so, it will be more prone to get collapse later on, and there are more chances later
on. Because you see, when you are doing something and saying something else, it also gives a lot of room for unscrupulous elements to take advantage of.
Yes, obviously.
And they do. You have heard, you know, for example, Mudarba scandal of one madrasa and then Taj company scandal. And what was that? That was the same thing in a smaller way, that they said it's a Muraba, whatever. They showed you Islamic contract and the back end, they were doing totally something different. But you trusted them because they had their Sharia scholars who approved that. The Sharia scholars approved the contract, which is fine, but they did not approve the practice or monitor the practice. But I'm not arguing on that. All I'm arguing, for example, US men, they have this and law of fair, responsible and fair banking laws, which is a very good idea, because then it eliminates any possibility of riba. So if you take conventional banking and introduce this kind of law and let time value of money exist, because this time value of money is not haram, is the misuse, block the misuse. So you will be able to get integrated into the global economy very fast and you will become efficient too. But if you are going to insist, no, We will not allow time value of money because it will get you misused, and that misuse is riba, and riba is haram. It's a long stretch.
Obviously.
You know, applying the rule of that riba to this banking stretch is a big stretch. First, you took the rules of trading and applied to currency, which was a stretch. And then you took the rules of the currency and applied to banking. It has become a huge stretch. And now everything is sort of out of sync and out of balance. We can continue to do what we want because, yes, very difficult. We are, you know, we have sort of nobody is willing to challenge because they believe that Sharia scholars are very strong and they'll get upset. I don't think so. The Sharia scholars, I've met them, I've worked with a lot of them. They're fairly open-minded. It's not that, but if you're not going to share your opinions with them clearly and very precisely, How are they going to get the feedback? You have a Sharia. I've worked with them. I never used to even be able to talk freely. Forget it. I would never talk in a loud voice or anything. And whatever the Sharia scholars told me, it was like cast in stone. Yeah. That's how we all are. How would the Sharia scholars know? The bankers never gave them the correct feedback. They said, yes, this is what you think. We agree. Let's go. So how are they supposed to tell you? So, but now I think it's about time. No disrespect to any Sharia scholar or advisor. They are all very learned, respectable people. But I think they deserve a very honest and a very straightforward feedback.
Opinion from the?
Bankers and economists. Bankers. And then they will, whatever rulings they come up with, will be far more well-informed and far more acceptable widely. So that is why I sit here and talk to you and I talk to everybody else. I have no... let's say disrespect or anything, but Sharia scholars are, you know, very, very important, very learned, very, you know, very respectable people, no doubt. But we are talking about banking, and I'm saying that we do not give the Sharia scholars the right feedback. So if you don't give them the feedback, how would they know? And they need to look at it, and they need to maybe consult bankers and economists and look at the whole issue right from the start, like I mentioned to you, and look at it from economic and banking point of view and see where the disconnect is. And I think they will be able to come up with much better system.
So basically, we need to look upon the financial system, right, involving the experts from the economics as well and incorporating the clergy system as well, so that we have we minimizing the disagreement and coming up the conclusion.
You see, right now, the Sharia advisors lead the effort in, I think internationally it was this one gentleman, I forget his name, from a Saudi, a Sharia advisor. He was the charge of a Sharia court, Justice Saki Usmani, our own, who is the Sharia court judge, and Nizam Yaqubi Sahib, who is a scholar from Medina University, but he is a Bahraini. These three gentlemen actually are... they are the ones who came up with the basically the Islamic banking system. And yes, they may have a working knowledge of economics and banking, but they are, neither of them is an expert.
And, economics.
And then they led the whole issue, and we, everybody, bankers and economists follow. I am saying, do another thing. Again, go into Qiyas, go into Ijtihad, and let the economists and bankers lead the whole initiative. The Sharia scholars need to advise them if there is something they are putting into the system that is against the rules and regulations of Islam, advise them, this is where you are wrong. Guide them to develop the system. Let them develop the system rather than the Sharia scholars develop the system and tell the bankers, oh, this is what you need to do. It should be the other way around this time. And you know, first we've had the very kind of them, very nice of them. They have given us the foundation and the basis. Now to take it to the next level, let's switch roles. And let the economists and the bankers come up with the system how to take it further. And let the Sharia advisors advise them as to what may be wrong purely from the point of
view Islamic banking system.
Of Sharia. Sharia rule, if there was any violations of that. Everything else, let the bankers decide what they need to do. They know the economists.
So basically, that's the point of importance why we invited you to have a flavor and you know, your expertise in terms of this topic particularly, so that the guiding principles can prevail to the planners and policy makers that can adopt later on when they're going to reintroduce the 2028 onward Islamic banking system. So they should, you know, make a collaboration between the clergy system as well as the economics as well, best economist, and come up with a fine solution so that they can have a better system later on that can easily prevail in future.
Absolutely.
That is the point of view. So thank you, Dr. Parvez Sai Saab. Bahut bahut shukriya. Thank you very much. And thank you, viewers. That is the point of view why we introduce and why we invite our guests, particularly on different concepts and different aspects of science and technology. And today's guest was Mr. Parvez Sai Saab, who has a huge knowledge of banking system, and he has actually was involved, and he was the pioneer of introducing Islamic system in Pakistan, Islamic banking system in Pakistan. So based on today's discussion, it is conclude, we can easily conclude that probably going without the bank expert's opinion, it is better to have a flavor of economist as well, so that the future of Islamic banking system, which is going to be started later by 2028, we need to introduce and we need to discuss and we need to, you know, have a better collaboration between different aspects of experts, so that the system can prevail in future and have more sustainability in future. This is Dr. Bilal Siddiqui, and thank you very much from STEM Connect. Thank you.
This is the end of the current blog post of STEM Talk by STEM Connect Private Limited. Thanks for tuning in to this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Drop your feedback in the comments below. If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiring discussions, expert insights, and powerful ideas shaping the future of science, technology, education, and innovation. Stay curious, stay connected.